Well, thanks for showing up, everyone. I know by Wednesday everyone's getting conferenced out, so I'm glad you guys could stay for this great session. You mind if I hit the lights? Good discussion as well. So I'm going to shift gears a bit. We were talking about cropping systems, and I'm going to talk about our climate change experiment on a harvested forest near Penn State, where I'm currently doing my PhD. And this is, we have some preliminary data on this project that involves an interactive effect, or looking at two different levels of warming and wetting on this harvested forest that we cut down and then implemented. So I'm going to jump in and say a lot of these experiments, these ecosystem manipulation experiments, they like to come up with these kind of catchy acronyms to describe them. And so the first order of business was to come up with our catchy acronym, and that was FORCE, which stands for the Forest Regeneration and Climate Experiment. And our overarching research question is, how will harvested forests respond to a changing climate? There's been a lot of research in both fields and harvesting studies for several decades now. There's been climate change experiments, but nobody has really looked at the impact of climate change on top of the model or the paradigm of harvested forests already. And my primary objective is to quantify the changes in soil carbon and nitrogen pools and fluxes due to increased temperature and precipitation in a post-harvest forest. Some of my other colleagues are looking at the biometrics of the regenerating vegetation, as well as competition, invasive species establishment, and various other plant metrics that we are then going to combine to get an overall ecosystem response to a regenerating forest under climate change. So I'm coming at it from a soils perspective. My background is in soil biogeochemistry, so that's what I'm kind of bringing to the table on this project. From harvesting studies such as Hubbard Brooks shown here, we know that whole tree harvests, and for those of you that attended the afternoon session yesterday, whole tree harvests are known to cause an increase in mineralization, shown here by this larger circular arrow, which then lead to an increase in CO2 flux and leached nitrate, or inorganic nitrogen, mostly in the form of nitrate. And this, in turn, leads to carbon and nitrogen losses from the A horizon. And this is pretty well established. There's a big meta-analysis paper on that. But again, what we wanted to do was take this paradigm. So we don't know how these carbon and nitrogen losses may be exacerbated, may be diminished under climate change because of regenerating vegetation. So if I take that model and then fill in the black box, the proverbial black box, there's mostly a microbial loop that drives these losses that I've talked about. And these are where basically all my research interests lie as well. The soil microbial community, the suite of enzymes produced by that community, and then the nutrients and energy that's thereby cycled by that in that community and the enzymes, and then the feedback effects. So if we overlay climate change again on top of this harvesting paradigm, we know that increases in temperature and precipitation will lead to changes in the soil temperature and soil moisture regimes in these harvested forest soils. And this, in turn, will affect the nodes in this microbial loop. There's been both laboratory and in situ studies that have shown increasing temperature can influence the soil microbial community. It influences the activity of the microbial enzymes, and then also increases, thereby increasing nutrients through mineralization. Both carbon and nitrogen mineralization have been shown to increase with increasing temperature and precipitation, which some models are predicting for Pennsylvania. And then that can lead to further dynamics within that microbial loop and potentially lead to greater nitrogen losses to waterways. We've talked about or heard about in the previous talks in this session and talked about a bit right before my talk. And then also CO2 feedbacks to climate change. So really, we want to understand those dynamics. And this is a picture of our research site prior to harvest. And this is in May 2007. It's a this site is located in Stone Valley Forest in Huntingdon County, Pennsylvania, in the center of the state, 20-minute drive from Penn State. The soils are alfisols. The trees are all, it's a mixed deciduous forest. All the trees are less than 100 years old. And the slope is about 10%. It's kind of hard to tell there. And then we harvested the site. And this is what it looked like after harvest. There's quite a bit of debris on the ground. And we left that as part of the heterogeneity of the system. And then, and that was, sorry, that was in August 2000. And then in June 2008, this is a picture. You already see regenerating vegetation. You see some of the infrastructure, how we're manipulating the climate, the infrared lamps we have up there, infrared heaters. And we brought electricity out to the site and also have data loggers. It's highly instrumented out there. We have data loggers and other information, weather information being sent to the shed there. The experimental design is in a 2x2 factorial. We're heating from ambient temperature, 2 degrees Celsius more with these infrared lamps that I mentioned earlier. We're adding extra precipitation, 20% more than mean annual precipitation, by collecting rainwater in these cisterns, essentially, and then applying it to the plots once a week. And then we have 4 blocks containing each treatment, an ambient, a heated alone, irrigated alone, and then a heated and irrigated. And this diagram shows the basic layout of our site. It's approximately 2 hectares. We have a block with each of the treatments within them. And then we have the cisterns around the perimeter, which we collect the precipitation that's added to the plots. So now what can we expect? So on the bottom here, I show each of the treatments. And I'm going to go through these hypotheses that I've developed here. According to previous research that has been done both on climate change experiments and those done from harvesting. So the fluxes immediately after harvest, we'd expect in the heated and irrigated, having the greatest mineralization, again represented by these fat circular arrows, in heated and irrigated, intermediate in heated and irrigated alone treatments, and then the least amount of mineralization in the ambient. Accordingly, we'd expect the CO2 fluxes to follow the same patterns, and also nitrogen losses or nitrogen leaching from the system as well to follow the same patterns. So if my first hypothesis is true, we would then expect soil organic matter pools to change because of these fluxes, right? So there's going to be some portion that is lost if this pie, this Pac-Man pie that I drew here, represents the soil organic matter pool. A portion of that is going to be lost due to harvest. And then there's both recalcitrant fraction shown by the darker pie chart here, and then the labile in the lighter pool. We'd expect that pool to be depleted the most in heated and irrigated, and have greater losses in that, also in that that pool. And then intermediate, again, in the heated and irrigated, in the heated and irrigated plots. And there have been experiments in mature forests that have warmed and actually seen a decrease in heating response due to this depletion of this organic matter pool. And we would expect in our system, which has a decrease in carbon inputs, that this diminishing in heating response might even occur quicker. So we might actually see at the end of the experiment, which will be next year, we have one more year of data collection, that at year 3 we might see an inverse of the relationships, or of the fluxes, and heated and irrigated would have the lowest fluxes, and then you see here in the diagram, ambient might be the greatest at this point. So now to jump into some of the data, soil CO2 efflux measured here in micromoles of CO2 per meter squared per second, and then data is on the x-axis here. Ambient is in the open circles, heated is in the red triangles, irrigated in the blue triangles, heated and irrigated in the purple. The first thing you notice is the typical bell-shaped respiration curve, telling you that respiration is highly temperature dependent. And then to go along with that, you see in the heating effect, we did a repeated ANOVA on this to get these p-values. These are p-values up here in the corner. You see a significant date by heating effect, and this, the separation of the heating here in the cooler months illustrates this well. For irrigation, you have in this mid to late summer in 2008, you have the irrigated plots having the highest respiration rates, and also a significant effect here of irrigation, but then non-significant in 2009. And we believe this to be because 2008 in State College was a pretty dry year relative to 2009. Heating and irrigation so show significant effects in both years. And in fact, there's something very interesting going on here, and maybe be some evidence to support my first hypothesis. So heating and irrigation, even though this is just one data point and this is speculative right now, heating and irrigation show the highest fluxes at the beginning when we started measuring CO2 flux from the soils, and then decreases rapidly and then is quite a bit lower than the rest of the treatments, including ambient, for the rest of 2008, and then recovers a bit and then is again lower than the rest of the treatments. So that's CO2 flux. Now, our way of kind of capturing the nitrogen flux, the nitrogen arrows that I was pointing down in my hypotheses, we use these resin membranes shown down here in the left bottom left corner. And this is an index of the available nitrogen. And there's a cation and anion membrane. We place these in the soil. And we leave that in the soil for a month during the growing season, and we leave them over winter. And then we extract it with KCl, and you get an inorganic N per centimeter squared of the resin membrane per day. So this is an index of how much nitrogen can potentially be lost or taken up by plants, and we have not yet determined that. But you see a significant heating effect in 2008, and then that diminishes in 2009, where you don't see a significant effect any longer. So labile or respirable carbon is measured in our lab by doing a month-long incubation where we measure respiration rate over 30 days and then integrating under that curve to get an amount of carbon that's easily respirable. We take that and normalize it for total organic carbon. And this is a graph showing the data from our fall 2008, the last sample that we have data for this. And irrigation shows a significant treatment effect, and then possibly heating heated and irrigation. What might be going on here, this is contradictory to my hypotheses, right? The treatments should have lower labile organic matter pools. What might be going on here is plant inputs, which my simplistic models have not taken into account yet, but we are measuring plant inputs to the system, and we're going to be doing, at the end of the experiment, kind of a total biomass harvest. Real quickly, respiration temperature sensitivity measured in Q10 for both 2008 and 2009 for the treatments. Heating causes a significant decrease in Q10. And irrigation actually does in the first year. And I'm interested in exploring more the mechanism responsible for this change in soil respiration Q10. And in the literature, there's a debate currently going on whether it's soil microbial thermal adaptation or a depletion of the labile substrates, which doesn't seem to be the case here, as I showed with the slide before this, or both of these mechanisms. So what can we say so far? Warming and wetting do appear to have an effect on CO2 efflux. Heating increases nitrogen mineralization in the first year, but that effect seems to disappear during the second year of the experiment. Respiration Q10s are decreased by heating. Labile carbon actually increases with irrigation and somewhat with heating, possibly, but the pools remain, total pools remained unchanged, and I haven't showed the data from total carbon and total nitrogen. But there's no significant effect, or over time as well. And then the big question is, how does the regenerating vegetation fit into this soil-centric model that I have? And we'll be exploring that more next year, as well as some of the microbial mechanisms that are responsible for the results I showed. So here I'd like to show how beautiful Pennsylvania can be in the fall, and also my acknowledgments. And at this time, I'll take any questions. Yes.
So you might have mentioned this in your method. So this was, you did not do any destructive sampling of the soil. You're just putting chambers on top to get the CO2 flux?
Yeah, we are taking soil samples. So because they're only 2 by 4 meter plots, we have to be very careful with how much soil we are extracting. So just, we take 3 soil samples a year, a spring, a fall, and a summer. And then I also had some other data that was inorganic extractable nitrogen that also shows the same pattern as the resin membrane inorganic nitrogen that I showed.
So I'm wondering if you have any, from the soil sample, you have any sense of how the rooting structure dynamics
change? We are measuring root biomass. During sampling, the soil samples I take, but also at the end, we're going to do a root density, some sort of metric on root density, and some of my colleagues would know how to do that better. I'm doing more of the bulk soil stuff, so. Yes?
Glad you're looking at the plants, because I think, when water and heat, the plants are probably going to have a big effect on carbon exudates, allocation below ground versus above ground.
Exactly.
Definitely a good direction to go. In the meta-analysis you mentioned, are there different climatic regional differences in harvesting and processes or nitrogen? I know there's a lot of different substrates and different soil types and that sort of thing, but do they try to tease out any climatic regional difference?
The meta-analysis I was referring to by Johnson and Curtis, they mostly look at temperate forests, but they do look at different harvesting type. So there's a difference between harvesting types, whether you do whole tree or clear cut harvest versus other types. And then they also look at different forests as well, whether it's a mixed hardwood or conifer, mostly a conifer forest. But there's a lot of variability in that meta-analysis, but we know from the clear cut or whole tree harvest sites that there is carbon and nitrogen loss in the A horizon.
Mm-hmm.
We distribute it once a week, so we take the monthly average, the historical average, and we know how much 20% more of that would be, and then we divide that into 4 and then add it once a week. So we are doing a frequency thing as well. No, we're not. But we are increasing frequency, which could have an effect, because there are, during those summer months when it was drier, there were some times when the soil was a bit dried out, but that irrigation effect was probably more pronounced, which I showed there with the CO2 flux.
Yes.